Would you believe I gotta be me? This is Dr. Herbert O'Barley, Dean of the University of Healing, University of Philosophy, Absolute Monastery, School of the Master, and all sorts of things down here in Campo, California, on the Mexican border, bringing you the Absolute Philosopher. I gotta be me. Now, we've been reading lessons, letters, talking to students, working with people around the globe for many, many years, well over 30 years, well over since 1948. And as we have dealt with these people, they have all come to the school saying they wanted to be a minister to help others. And the first thing we teach them is, no, you want to be a minister to help yourself. You want to walk your spiritual path, and in walking your spiritual path, if you can share it with others, that's great. If not, that's great. Be yourself and have fun. Be yourself and have fun. We firmly announce this again and again and again and again and again. And unfortunately, if you start a church, which some foolish people do, if you start a church, then you have people coming in the church expecting your church to be like all the other churches. Your church should teach the Bible like the other churches do. And of course, we teach the metaphysical aspect of it. Your church should care about the sick and the poor like the other churches do. And hey, that's cool, you know? Your church is supposed to do this. And we tell them, no. If you're a minister, you're first a minister to yourself, and you're first a wonderful minister to yourself, a wonderful person. Everything is going along just beautifully and wonderfully in your life and your affairs. And then if other people come into your life, they say, wow, what a great person you are. What a wonderful minister you are. What a fine person you are. What a joy it is to talk to you. You know, you have such a nice attitude. You have such a nice way of thinking about things. You have such a nice philosophy. They don't come to you because they want you to read the Bible the way they do. They don't come to you because they want you to put them first. They don't come to you because they want you to be a copy of their misery. They come to you because you are a living example of a spiritually illumined person. And this is what it is. And of course, if you got to be me, I got to be me. If you got to be you, then that's what you're going to be, a spiritually illumined person. You're going to be a happy person. You're going to be the kind of person that people want to be around. Every church that I have ever had, and I've had a good number of them, and in these churches, wherever I was, usually for a couple of years, and then I'd go on to some other church, and I wasn't a person who had to stay there and stay there and stay there, because I gave them my best, and then I went on to the next group and gave them my best, and I shared it around, and each group grew and developed wonderfully. Well, whenever a church would say to me, well, you're doing great, Herb, but I want you to build up the congregation more. Time to leave. You're doing great, Herb, but I want you to put more time on the church activities and the church this and the church that. That's time for me to leave. I'm being me. I do what I feel guided to do. I feel what I am doing. Now, can you imagine Billy Graham having people tell him where to head in and what to do? Billy Graham knows exactly what he wants to do, and he does it. Now, Bob Schuller, his golden cathedral, his glass cathedral, I'm sure people in the beginning said to him, Bob, you really have taken on quite a task for yourself. That's not a realistic thing. But it didn't bother him. He merely associated with richer people. The people who had a rich consciousness who said, go for it, Bob. I'll throw in $2 or $3 million. I'll throw in $10 million. No problem. You know, we'll support you with this. Bob, you're a great guy, Bob. We like your personality. You don't let anybody step on you or shove you around or tell you what to think or do. You just do your own thing, and you're a great guy, Bob. You're a great guy. And, you know, they came up to Jesus, and they said to Jesus, hey, you know, you're a Jewish rabbi. why aren't you teaching what the Jewish rabbis teach? He says, if the Jewish rabbis knew what I knew, they'd teach what I teach. But they don't teach what I teach because they don't practice what they're teaching. And I live what I teach. And you see, everything that I teach is in the Jewish teachings. There's nothing strange. I'm a good rabbi. I'm an honorable rabbi, as far as rabbis go, you know, because I'm teaching those things in our philosophy that I believe. Now, Ernest Holmes, he had a brother who went one way and he went another way. You know, his brother went in, I think it was Lutheran and Methodist, whatever he went into. He went into and became a good minister. The brother was a good fundamental minister and really did very well. He had the number of churches and he was always somebody else's patsy. Somebody else was telling him how to run the church, you know, church policy, the church program, headquarters and stuff like that. Ernest Holmes said, hey, I got a philosophy. And he wrote the philosophy down in the book. And then he went out and he lived it. Now, he didn't do it very successfully for quite a while because for 30, 40 years, he didn't do anything with it. He just had the book and it was a good seller. And then he started to try to develop a church around it, develop an organization around it. And people didn't come. For years, nothing happened, you know, for nothing. But then he started just being himself and having fun. He got up on that stage and he just talked about his philosophy, talked about his dreams, talked about his goals. It was consistent with what he wrote in his book because that's what he believed. And people just said, wow, this man is great. This man's living truth of it. Ernest Holmes is fantastic, fantastic, you know. And they followed him. And the Fillmores, they were nothing. They had their little study groups and they had their little publications they put out. And they didn't do much at all. And then all of a sudden, they began to become organized. And then Charles Fillmore got up and just started talking and doing great. And people always said, well, where's Myrtle? Where's Myrtle? She died. And where's Myrtle, you know? And Charles was a very powerful man. But he didn't let anything bother him. When people say, where's Myrtle? He says, she's talking to me. You know, we have conversations now and then, if that's what they wanted to know, you know. He didn't care, as he knew that she was doing her thing and he was doing his. Now, great people are like that. Now, what makes the Pope great? What makes the Pope great? The Pope is not in himself great. It is the men who take over the popery that are great. These men take over this job and they fight their way to the top, and some know exactly what to do. They put the dogs to fighting at each other and then they end up on top, you know? And it's quite a, if you were to ever study how they do their program, you'd be quite amused because it's so obvious what they're doing. They're putting each other against each other so that nobody gets enough votes, and then they get the most votes because nobody's against them. And nobody even knows that's the way. And it works so beautifully. And Pope John, Pope Paul was the coolest on that. And he made everybody think he was such a wonderful guy, and that he was for everybody, but he was for himself, you know. So everybody voted for him because they thought he was so nice, you know, not realizing that he was going to make it. And, of course, he made it. But they were in there for a long time that they have these jobs. But, you see, they're being themselves. Pope John was being himself and having fun. He would get up and do his mass, and he'd do the various things that he did, but he was just having a ball. He went out to more parties than you could ever know, and he did more things than you'll ever know. And everybody isn't going to talk about it either. But some big mouths do. But the thing is, he was just a cool guy. And who was in his suite all the time when he was meditating, when he was doing his things? Nobody. And neither was he. He was out having a ball. Yes. You know, the Pope has their out of the popery is a private passage that no one speaks about and no one points to and no one knows about. And if the Pope goes out, nobody reports it, because they just have a little watchman go along with them to make sure that everything's okay. But never do they invade his privacy or his program. And to this day, they still do it. I think perhaps our present Pope may have locked it up because he felt that that was contrary to the rules of popendom. But that's part of the game that they love to play. Now, you see, this is true everywhere. Now, look at our dear friend, the Dalai Lama. Our dear friend, the Dalai Lama. What is on his face all the time?
A smile.
Chocolate cake.
Yeah.
Yeah. On his face all the time is a smile because he is having a ball. He is not going to allow himself to be an exiled being. He has now the world. He was kicked out into the world to go around the world just having a ball. And everybody loves him. Not because he's the Dalai Lama, not because he knows something. I mean, if they loved him because he knew something, they'd go to the Tibet and learn from him, you know. But they love him because he's just a nice personality. He's a nice attitude. He's a nice guy. And he lives what he believes. And what he believes is, hey, it's all cool. If you've ever read any of his books, they're exactly like ours, you know. Just saying positive, vital, dynamic things. Well, now, every minister of every church either does his own thing and does it beautifully and is a success, or he does what the congregation wants and he's just a poor cousin to the church, you know. He's not very valuable, not very beneficial, because he's not being himself and having fun. And who wants a minister that's not having fun, you know? That's a shame. It's really a shame. And some ministers are brought up like that, and some ministers are brought up that they're the poor ones, you know, like Pollyanna. Her daddy was a minister, and he died and stuff like that. And they would send old clothes over the missionaries. You know, my goodness sakes, why didn't they go to the, Goodwill and pick up new stuff, you know? Rather than taking people's old, worn-out clothes, go to Goodwill and get the new stuff they got there, you know? Or if the church is going to send clothes over and it costs money to send it, might as well send new stuff. And all you got to do is go for factory rejects. You can go to any manufacturer and they have rejects. And they'll sell those rejects for nothing on a dollar because they want to make something off of it. And if you're sending it there, they'll say, okay, give us a tax deduction. Oh, my goodness sakes, you know. Who wants old, worn-out clothes of the congregation who have poor taste and it's out of date when you can go to the manufacturer and offer him a tax reduction, you know, because you're a non-profit corporation, and then you can send that to your missionaries in China and Asia and all the places. But those people over there in China and Asia have better clothing than any missionary could ever be sent, you know. You know. I mean, they're wealthy countries. And you can be sure that the missionaries in those now wealthy countries are doing pretty good, because the members of their church have realized that they give to their church. And so of their opulence, they're giving to their church. I mean, we are living in a totally different world than centuries ago when the Puritan attitude was very much rife here. Yes. I got to be me. And if you're not going to be you, I don't want you around me. Because if you're going to try to be me, yeah, you can't make it. I'm doing a good job of being me, but I'm the only one who can do it. But if you're going to try to be anybody else, you're no fun to be with. What would your mother say if she saw you doing this? What would Jesus say if he saw you doing this? You know, what would your auntie say if she saw you doing this? Who cares? Who cares? Do I have good habits? Do I have good upbringing? Do I have good manners? Do I have good, morals and so forth? Yes. And so, therefore, what would Jesus say? He'd say, can I join you? You know? Mm-hmm. Everything I do, Jesus would say, can I join you? Because he knows it's good and very good. Now, hey, where have you ever heard that before? Never. Nobody would ever say, what would Jesus say if he were looking over your shoulder? He'd say, can I join you? You know? Can I join you? And that's true. That's what a spiritual experience would be. Can I join you? Wonderful, isn't it? And we still haven't gotten our thing quite in order here for some reason or other. I think either the table is twisting or something. You stand here and you look there and there and you see a leg over here and a leg over there. And you know the placemat's in the middle. What I'm talking about here, I got to be me. I want to sit in the middle of our round table, which has four legs, so that my feet go between two of them, nice in the center. And then right at my back is the recording device here, the computer for recording the thought for today, instant illumination, and autobiography of God, I mean the absolute monastery, absolute philosopher, all those good things. And it's wonderful, isn't it? Isn't it wonderful?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, I got to be me. You want to join me?
Yes.
I love you. I love you.
Love you.
I love you.